Sven, for the introduction, and thanks to Dieter Daniel and the co-organizers for the invitation. Summarizing our precedent email exchange, Sven noted that our statements would be about Duchamp, work or labor, Arbeit, time, and about value. I'll try to at least roughly confirm this prophecy, but I'll take a side entry. One of Duchamp's posthumously published notes reads, "A factory of sandpaper for the exclusive use by Brancusi." In 1927, taking up the suggestion of the architect and designer Jean Prouvé, Brancusi had one of his new barns cast in stainless steel. But instead of the perhaps expected perfection, it came out of this only quasi-industrial production process with a crumpled surface like the skin of a toad. And it had to be polished all the more and all the longer by the artist's hand, or to be precise, by the sandpaper within the artist's hand. Only after this patient and, one could say, this motherly work, Brancusi used to carry his pieces at his body while polishing them. The newborn, smooth and shiny now, even though never as glossy as a Jeff Koons, would be placed on its pedestal that connects it to the vertical force of gravity and thus to the earth. A factory of sandpaper for the exclusive use by Brancusi. Duchamp's aphorism relates this bodily labor back onto a strangely monumental and obscure side, the factory, where in a production process with a high proportion of machine labor, Brancusi's sandpaper was mass-produced. This factory, Duchamp suggests, would really be the womb from which the newborn is born. The artist's hand, they did not do much to smoothen the surface of a stainless steel cast. The surface of the newborn is the imprint, or has to be read as the imprint, of the sandpaper, and by that of the factory, that is of the machines that produced the sandpaper in the first place. The contraindication that there obviously is no such factory that produces exclusively for Brancusi hints to a kind of belatedness of Brancusi's, Duchamp's good friend's, artistic production. In his cult place like studio, with his natural materials, his archaic tools, and his lamb legs roasted on the fireplace. Duchamp's remark about this dubious factory should be related to his often discussed notes about the inframince, the infra-thin or infra-meager, polishing and its effects, mirroring or shiny surfaces, together with moiré effects, are among the examples for the inframince mentioned by this Duchamp from the visual field. Another central example, however, are the disappearingly small differences, not of two cosmic eggs, but of two things of whatever kind, but produced in series, that is, descending from the same mold. If the maximum precision is reached, then the difference between two such serial products, two such casts from the same mold, is an example of the inframince. With the ready-mades, Duchamp took one such object directly from the factory, which means from a more or less standardized machine-based production process, able to and meant to reproduce the same object in the same quality in an endless series. The factory, thus, is the mold of the ready-made. What kind of labor, then, is involved in its production? In the case of Duchamp's classic ready-mades, there was probably still some handiwork in play. But the living labor involved in the production process of these relatively old-fashioned goods, made, by the way, from rather classical materials of sculpture, like metal, wood, ceramics, the living labor involved here is or was obviously superseded by the guiding rules of serial production, to reproduce a given prototype. And even in a small factory, these rules are not implemented as a linguistic prescription alone. They are materialized in and as the tools and machines that are used in the production process. The substance of these tools and machines, the substance that makes them functional in the production of nearly identical objects, is not this or that material as such, but this substance is the past labor that is sedimented in them. The one mold of the factory is able to produce a principally endless chain of identical objects, not because its tools and machines are made of more resistant materials, of harder materials, than the flow of the raw matter on which they imprint their form. The difference of the factory and the commodities which are minted or cast or produced in it has to be put in economical terms as the difference of fixed and variable capital. The commodities descending from the factory in an endless chain belong to the small circulation of consumer goods. They are meant to be consumed in as quick a circle of renewal as the market allows. The built-in obsolescence of the product drives this circulation and necessitates quicker reproduction. The machines and the factory, however, on the other hand, belong to the much slower investment cycle. They are used as long as possible to produce as many consumer goods as possible. And their value, that is the living labor that was historically incorporated in them in the first place, this value of the machines is given over to its product only at a very slow rate, in exact proportion to their own tearing and chafing. So if a machine doesn't destroy itself while producing the objects, it does just gives no value to the products, if you can use it endlessly. So Duchamp takes an object that, being a more or less serial product, carries the imprint of, or even is the imprint of, the dead labor, which is the substance of the mold of the factory. And he takes these objects ready-made, tout fait, without that intermediary transformation that makes a coarse piece of metal into an iridescent sculpture, or that makes some tube of paint into a painting by Seurat. He takes one of these nearly identical objects, and at a certain point in time, in the case of the comb, it seems to have been February 17, 1916, 11 a.m. At a certain point in time, he inscribes it with a kind of signature, a poetical sentence without normal sense, as he puts it, and with a date. This choice and inscription of an already made object has to be understood as Duchamp's conceptualization of artistic production. The choice is what one has to think of as artistic production with Duchamp. But what then is it that he has produced in this way? Since obviously it's not the object as such which was already there. At the center of Duchamp's conception of the ready-mades is their relation to his chef d'oeuvre, the large glass. I will make a little excursus on that to answer this question, what it is that he has produced if it's not the object as such. I won't go in any details, but only try to sketch the formal or abstract frame of the relation between the ready-mades and the large glass. The large glass has one, among many, one basic structural interest, and that's an interest that relates it also to the painting of the nude descending a staircase. And this interest is the relationship of the synchronous image space to movement and time. Duchamp frames this as an interest in a higher dimension and a different kind of perspective. Not that of the reduction and representation of a three-dimensional space on a two-dimensional plane, but of a four-dimensional continuum in or on a three-dimensional space. One line of the argument about this relation of dimensions is very simple. If a point, a continuum of zero dimension, cuts a one-dimensional line, if a line cuts a two-dimensional plane, if a two-dimensional plane cuts a three-dimensional space, then by analogy, obviously, space, the three-dimensional space we live in, must be thought of as a cut through a four-dimensional continuum. The organizing questions in the notes related to the large glass are thus the following. Can we construct a perspective in which a three-dimensional space is marked and made perceivable as such a cut through a four-dimensional continuum? And can this cut be framed and filled in such a way that it opens up, just as the plane of a perspectival painting opens to an illusionistic space? Can this cut that is the space be conceived in such a way that it opens to the semblance, a kind of illusion, a kind of four-dimensional depth? That would be the analogy. During the long work at the large glass, Duchamp invented a bunch of methods to conceive such a cut through the continuum of four-dimensional space-time and also such a kind of projection of four-dimensional perspective. One of the most famous one is this here. One of these methods is the dust breeding, the projection over a period of several months of the dust and of all that breathable air that carried the dust particles while they sank down following the law of gravity on the backside of the glass, resulting in this densified state, or as Duchamp put it, in a reversed image of porosity. The four-dimensional continuum is this time space in which the plane of the glass, after the fixing of the dust, function as an even only two-dimensional cut. So the four-dimensional continuum are these 4 to 6 months or whatever, or 3 to 4, the different notes, while the dust sinks on the surface. And this is what he conceives as a four-dimensional perspective, as a kind of projection in which the dimension of time is integrated. The ready-mades relate to these reflections about perspective in the following way. How can we mark, is the question, how can we mark in this three-dimensional space in which we breathe and live and from which we can't escape, that it is only a cut? How can we conceive of the present space as something ultra-thin, in a way, like a cut, like a mere separation in a higher-dimensional continuum? The answer is simple: by inscribing it with its present date. To do this, you need a clean surface, and the ready-made provides this material support of a sometimes quite precise date and a kind of signature, the inscription of this poetic sentence that Duchamp writes on its body to discern it from all its mate, from all its kumpels, like ses copains, which descend from the same mold, which carry the imprint of the same dead labor, of the same factory. From this moment of its singularization onwards, from this moment of the inscription of the date, the ready-made, as the carrier of its date, begins to differentiate itself from itself, second by second, by and with the progress of time. So Duchamp didn't obviously produce this object, just as Seurat didn't produce his tubes of paint or Michelangelo his marble, etc. What he produced is not the object, but the never-ending process of its reception, of its exposure to its spectators or onlookers who made it and continue to make it into an image or into a work of art. Duchamp's product, the product of his living labor, the labor of choosing the object, of dating and framing it, and of organizing its public afterlife, as he did with this photograph of Alfred Stieglitz, Duchamp's product is this very process of an always unfinished reception process, in which the material object, which he didn't produce, is but a kind of catalyst. That this catalyst is a more or less industrially produced object is basic for Duchamp's conception, because it must provide a clean surface for the inscription of the date. To provide the process of its receptions with a clean starting point, the object as such shouldn't bring with it any evocations of meaning or any individual prehistory, as prominently the surrealist objects Trouvé do. The use of a serial product, a commodity, is thus methodologically necessary for Duchamp's conceptions, but for Duchamp's conception of the ready-made, but the commodity status of the work itself is not at all an issue. All the less so, since the ready-made, as the processual work of art, or as this work process that starts in the moment of dating, the ready-made is in no way identical with its object carrier, or with all these object carriers to which it's the original object that was signed and dated or was inscribed is multiplied during the work process, which remains one process with one non-reproducible point in time where it starts, namely sometime in 1914, even if it multiplies like is here documented in this collection that Lars Blunk made and gave me. Thank you to him again. Only with the strong wave of the ready-made's reception in the 1950s and 1960s, the identification of the artwork with the absolute commodity, an identification latent in minimal art and programmatic in Andy Warhol, this identification of artwork and absolute commodity became in a way retroactively a central feature of an only now so-called ready-made strategy. Since then, we can, of course, follow the reception of Duchamp's, since the 1950s, one could say, with this focus on the fetish and the commodity form, a lineage that would include also parts of the most interesting forms of appropriation art and would lead, of course, to something like Jeff Koons, also later pieces of Jeff Koons, which I don't show. Historically more important seems to me a feature of art since the 1960s, which we can't account as an influence of Duchamp, but which narrowly relates to points brought up by and with the ready-made, and I mean the unprecedented amount of dead labor that is involved in, and unquestioningly accepted in so much artistic production since the 1960s. It's the dead labor sedimented, for example, in the industrial materials used by Donald Judd, or it's the dead labor sedimented in the machine of the photo camera or in the silk screen used by Andy Warhol. And it's this dead labor, of course, that enables seriality in minimal and pop art. And it's the dead labor that allows also the production of, say, classical conceptual works like Lawrence Wiener's 2 minutes of spray can of spray paint directly upon the floor from a standard aerosol can. This is the factory of this ready-made, the standard aerosol can. And it enables this deviant reproduction or restaging by Stephen Preener as his own work directly on a white guide and absent printer painting. So we see here that the factory or the mold can be a JPEG. It can be, as in Oliver Larik's work, it can be a data file, to use for 3D printing. Here we are in the realm where the production of art is channeled by the labor sedimented in the apparatuses and machines of nowadays. To call this a legacy of Duchamp would wrongly personalize, I think, a broad and inescapable condition of artistic and of any kind of production in a highly industrialized society. But to look about this present form from a to look at this present from a Duchampian point of view might still be useful and clarifying. I hope that we can discuss about it. Thank you.